Are we going?
So we are.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Estate Makes Us Drink. Brian Quinlan here from Daniels Real Estate.
Brad Nickum with Nest Mortgage Group.
And as usual, we have ourselves another guest. Sir, welcome to the show. Tell the people who you are.
I'm Remington Ramsey. Nice to meet you guys. And whoever's watching.
That's right.
Are we live?
We're not live.
I like that we have a spectator, though. That's exciting.
We're alive.
we are live in studio in front of our one person studio audience. Hello, Sean Daniels. Thanks for coming on out today. So Remington, your business is what? So people know.
Most people know me for starting Real Producers Magazine. I was a vendor in real estate for a few years, calling on realtors to sell closing gifts, essentially. And then started a magazine, basically coaching on others to do the same thing, connecting vendors with realtors. And that's the big business that blew up. We're in 140 markets now.
Hey, all right. Well, let's get to drinking. So cheers to you, Brad.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Remington.
What do you got there?
Oh, hey, it's beer.
What kind of beer?
So let's see. The one off today is called Dorothy's New World Lager. It's out of Iowa. And I don't know, it was named after, as I was reading, it was like named after the grandmother or aunt or somebody from the company. So, it's my usual light lager here. Tastes like a lot of the others.
Someday I think people should send you beer to have on the show.
I think that's a great idea.
You're the beer drinker. You don't drink tequila.
Yeah. Brad really wants me to be a tequila guy.
Yeah.
But
he wants everyone to be a tequila.
Yeah.
Everybody should be.
I think all tequilas taste the same.
No. So, okay. You just said that, but does Siempre taste the same as other tequila?
It does, but better.
What about Yayo?
Yayo's fine.
Some of them like it better than some of the
others, but taste overall to me, pretty much the same. One of the continuing jokes on the show is that I have taste pals. I don't have taste buds.
Nice.
So my sense of taste is just not great.
Everything tastes like chalk to you.
That's false. But I see a clear liquid in your glass. Brad, what do you got?
Well, TC Craft may be one of those that fits into the category that we just talked about. It's a small, a craft-made tequila, traditional, owned by Todd and Chris from Nashville, Tennessee.
All right.
Made at a distillery that is woman-owned, a woman master distiller, and everybody that works there is a woman.
Is that rare in the tequila world?
Yeah. Rare.
I know it is in the bourbon world.
Yeah. Very rare just to have, there's a lot of distilleries won't even let women work in them.
Oh, wow.
So it's not like America in all ways. It's different. Great tequila. And then I poured you a glass of the Don Vicente. You have the Don Vicente Blanco, which is made at NAM 1579, and that's a phenomenal tequila as well.
Wow, it's very good. I'm a novice when it comes to tequila, but I'll sip on this.
Yeah, it's a good sipper. You think a tequila is supposed to go into a drink, but good tequila can be sipped.
Yeah.
But it also make a cocktail with good tequila makes the cocktail even better.
Yeah, for sure. We discovered pineapple margaritas a couple weeks ago, and it's been dangerous.
Yeah. If you take, let's say you owned your own bar, if you did, you could throw a high-proof tequila, a high-proof Blanco into your Palomas or margaritas, you can use less tequila.
Oh, yeah.
In the drink, but actually have more of an agave forward flavored cocktail.
Sure.
And save yourself some money, if you owned a bar and did stuff like that.
If you did.
You own a bar?
I do. Yeah. I'm one of the owners of Parks Place Pub and Fishers, if we have any Fishers listeners out there.
I'm sure there are a few. I've been to Parks Place Pub a few times. I like it up there.
Yeah. We're trying to get Brad to play his guitar out there.
I've done it.
Oh yeah, you were jammed with the
Hill & Oates. Yeah,
yeah. Technically, I have too. Then,
yeah,
yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it's a good band.
I have 100 expired appetizer cards I could give you.
Yeah, it's cool.
Do expiration dates are they important?
We can get them more.
No, you got them to me in December with them expiring in December, but we.
How you took people in December
to get them.
That's right. Got to hurry up and get in there.
Yeah. What's too late? They expired already.
All right.
You go. Need a time machine now.
All right. So before Real Producers, you were selling closing gifts. I know that company because for about a month I worked for that company.
Cutco?
Cutco. Exactly. Yeah. It was back in my college days. I was not very good at it, so it didn't last long.
I wasn't very good when I started. Yeah, that was that call. Cutco is funny because they recruit a ton of kids. Like, they recruit more than the Army. That's based on numbers. So, but yeah, it's sell to your friends and family, see who gets good at it, and you know, strong survive.
Now, is it set up like a multi-level?
Nope. No, a true multi-level, like, you can never make more money than the person above you, whereas this is more set up like insurance. Like, if you recruit somebody, you might get a pay off of what they sell, but the person who recruited me is out of the business, and they're not making any money off of it, and I sold the business after 10 years. That's as long as it's the longest I knew of anyone ever working at Cutco, because it is like a college. But there are some lifers there, and their model has always been recruiting college kids since the 80s.
Well, their recruiting was pretty good because the money they advertised that you could make in that job.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, talk about appealing to college kids.
Sure.
So totally see why people get into it.
I paid my school off. I went to Olivet, about $30,000 a year, and I paid it off with Cutco dollars.
Very nice.
Yeah. So I bet my brother-in-law still works there. Oh. Brett Wiggins. I tell every college kid I know to work there.
Okay.
I paid off my college by not going.
That's smart.
The dude who wrote the book,
Miracle Morning.
Thank you. Miracle Morning.
Yeah. Hal Elrod.
He was huge in Cutco.
Yeah. Yeah. He came from, there's a Cutco alumni of authors and speakers that it's kind of a breeding ground for that business.
Did you ever meet Hal?
Oh, yeah. I know Hal very well.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Like a nice guy?
Yeah. He's sold a lot of copies. His story is pretty incredible. He's gone through bouts of cancer, survived a car crash. Like, he's lived quite the life.
That's for sure. I mean, plus, like, that book has multiple versions.
It does. He brought in like multiple, like Michael Mayer did a version with him for real estate. I know this is a real estate podcast half the time.
Half times.
usually it's this half.
So yeah, the book's done phenomenal. It's one of the top selling books. And I think he self-published it. So he's doing pretty well.
Now, speaking of writing books, didn't you write a book?
I did. It just came out a few weeks ago. This is my first podcast since the book came.
Let's see.
Oh, is this what you want, or you want the
book? Yeah, I'll take that too. See the book.
Let's see this book.
Agent Allies.
There we go.
And this book is to help you learn how other people to sell to realtors.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, I my journey was selling to realtors, but then coaching other people on how to groom relationships with realtors. I mean, Chapter one is just understanding ROI, because everyone who holds a marketing title or is taught this in college basically is told that marketing is how much money you give somebody and how much money you can track from what you gave that person. And I mean, I own a magazine that is print where it's virtually impossible to track, you know, the actual dollars that come back to you because of like the compound effect. How often am I seeing these, like the branding effect? So really, this book was written to help vendors understand how to groom relationships with realtors and build their business from vendors. But there's a lot for realtors as well for starting. I mean, I think every realtor should start a side hustle. I mean, there's so much knowledge you have, and there's like 100 different ways to make money in real estate. So the book gets into that too.
I should read that. Maybe I could figure out how to work with some realtors.
Yeah.
It would help your business.
He looks at a guy like me and goes, I don't even know how he has any realtors, but it works out. I do.
Now, I've had Brad on a couple calls talking about, like, I remember at the beginning of last year when everyone else was complaining, like, you were thriving. And there's a lot of principles. I mean, there's only 10 chapters, but a lot of the stuff I talk about, I know you apply in your business. Just the biggest, I think someone who's brand new, not in real estate already, starts a service company and thinks to themselves, I'm going to call on realtors. The first thing they just need to know is not all realtors are created equal. I think a lot of people take that for granted. I mean, real estate in general is the largest turnover rate in any industry. It's the largest trade organization. There's 1.8 million of them, but it's also the highest turnover rate. So most of the realtors, based on numbers, are not worth calling on. And if anyone gets offended by that, you're probably one of those realtors. So because, you know, if you're not offended by that, it's because you work hard and you take care of your vendors. And that's who we're after anyway.
Yeah, I agree with you. With, you know, 20 plus years of calling on realtors, and my business comes from realtors, and that's, I'm 95% of my closings are realtor referred. And I do have a lot of realtors that maybe do one a year, right? I treat them the same way as the ones that I work with that, you know, do 20 a year.
Sure.
Because they're all important, but it, you do have to look at the time that you spend and where you focus your efforts. You know, guys like, you know, Sean Daniels out there, who's just absolutely killing it.
Yeah.
You know, Sean says he's going to have a couple of meetings, and I say, well, I'll take care of the food for those meetings, right? Because I appreciate what you do.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, Sean will turn your business into more business.
Yes,
because he's an advocate for your business,
yep.
Right? It's
oh,
not
yeah.
just about him. And I think a lot of realtors make it about them. Get this painted on time for me. Make sure you get the lawn mowed for me. We got to get this out for my client. But the amount of time a realtor will spend with one client is nowhere near the amount of time they'll spend with the vendors with all their clients. And so you should take care of your vendor partners 10 times over what you do your single client.
And, you know, for us as a loan officer, we sometimes spend more time with the client.
Oh, for sure.
And get way more intimate in details.
Definitely.
Tell people, you know, I give every customer a fiscal colonoscopy to figure out if they can buy the house, right?
Yes.
So, like, I'm learning about everything. And what's really funny is 3 years later, 4 years later, when they're ready to move up and sell that house, a lot of times they call me before they call the agent.
Sure.
Because now they know the important part's finding out, can I get approved for this? You know,
yeah.
What's my payment going to be? So then I refer that back to the referring agent. And that's, you know, really help build that, because I'm an advocate for my agents.
Yeah, everybody wins.
Well, now I'm going to read that. I'm going to learn some. You're not taking that one home.
I hope you do.
Here.
I'll sign it.
Dude, that one's like 103 pages. That's
it.
Like
it's
a
90-minute read. You can get it done on a flight.
90 minutes for a normal person.
Okay. We'll see how long it takes, folks.
I'll have that done by second quarter.
Is it on Audible yet?
Not yet, but I'm recording it right now.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, you get to do the actual recording?
Actually, that's what I'm going to do after you guys are done. I'm going to sneak back in here and record it on these microphones.
Okay.
Because these are nice microphones.
We'll blast it through the...
This cool set. Like, if you're... Do you post this to audio only as well?
No, it's a YouTube.
It's
a video.
It's only YouTube.
No, both.
So it's both. But so what I'm saying is, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen the set, you need to check out YouTube, because this set is one of the coolest podcast sets. Very cool. You ever, like, just play stuff in the background?
Well, up until 2 weeks ago, it's always been a slideshow of whoever our guest is.
Oh, that's cool.
So we go and research and make a slideshow. But
now Brad has way... He's got a lot of time-consuming things going on.
Apparently.
This tequila show, this, and his regular business. He didn't got time to be making slideshows.
Not the challenge is like with Carl, who we just had on, who last posted on his Facebook in 2012...
Yeah.
Now the research to find some pictures is really difficult. So some of our guests are like zero social media people. And then,
yeah,
you know, it's hard to create this podcast. And it has been a little bit busy. So, yeah.
Now, you have a podcast.
I do.
Which is from Real Producers.
Yeah. So for 10 years, I spent most of my time recruiting franchises. Prove the concept in indie. Hey, this magazine is going to go to the top 500 realtors. We got to get vendors to support it. We got to throw events. That's basically what I did. After proving the concept, I had to go out and recruit people to do it in their prospective cities. So when I say we're in 140 cities, if you land in a major market, we're there. We've got a magazine there, sometimes multiples. Like Chicago, we have three.
Mm.
So after 10 years of bringing it all together, this year, especially the last 2 years, we've been building up to this national event we're doing, which is actually in September, called RP Elevate. If you go to rpelevate.com, you can get your tickets there. We've got...
Will it be in Indy?
It will be in Dallas.
All right.
Not going to be in Indy. For the first one, we wanted to go to a little bit more attractive city for like flights.
Was Vegas closed?
Vegas was not closed.
Wait, Dallas is more attractive than Indianapolis?
Our printer is in Dallas. So there's a lot of like, yeah. So, but anyway, the podcast and the webinars that we do are kind of like a support the national. So our podcast, we have anywhere, we have guests that are mostly top realtors. Like I'm talking like the top 100 realtors in the country are on the show. And then also lesser known stories that people might not know from top producers, and then authors and speakers, big name people as well.
And you had a pretty big name recent guest.
Talking about Molly?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Molly's Game, the Netflix hit movie, if you haven't seen that, it's a great movie. The book is even better. Basically the story of an ex-Olympian who started an underground celebrity poker game that was shut down by the FBI. But the movie's phenomenal because it was directed and written by Aaron Sorkin, wrote The West Wing. Anyway, Molly's a big deal, and she'll be speaking. She's a keynote speaker, and we just had her on the podcast last week that dropped, actually. So, Real Producers Podcast, thanks for the shout-out.
He was fired up one time, listened to one of your podcasts, and he's like,
oh, I
got to listen to this podcast.
I wish I remember which one it was.
I forget who it was, too, because I listened to it after you told me. He was so excited. So,
it was just a real estate agent that was talking about stuff?
No, it was me when you were, I don't know which interview you did, but it was, I was like,
it was like, like a person that, like a mentalist.
Oh, well, I had a facial recognition guy named Brian Galke.
That's what it was.
And so he can break it down. That was a wild episode, and he's actually speaking RP Elevate as well. But he can take your face based on not only, he can tell you things about your life, because your face changes over time based on, like, so for instance, like your ears go back into your head the less you actually, like, listen to people. So, like, if your ears are out here, you're much more susceptible.
Yeah.
So, people with big nostrils are like thrill seekers because they need to get more air into their, I mean, like, little things like that. So, he uses, like, this knowledge to help teach, like, sales techniques. It's a wild
episode. Yeah.
What happens if you have one of them big butt chins?
Oh, I didn't get that far. You should have him on the show. That's right.
At the Q&A, when you go to RP Elevate, you can...
You don't want to know what that means. Yeah.
So, how did the concept of Real Producer Magazine come about?
So, I was selling knives, as you know, and it was hard to sell knives. I was 23. I didn't even own my own home when I started. So I didn't really speak the language of real estate. I didn't know any realtors. I didn't speak the language at all. I called them realtors, which really ticked them off.
I still call them realtors.
I thought they flipped homes. I thought that's what selling a home was. You flip homes. So I was like saying, how many homes do you flip? They're like, zero. And I was like, I thought you were a realtor. And just so I was really bad. But as I was selling...
Conversation is over.
I was selling my knives. I finally got like one brokerage. Shout out to Carpenter. Carpenter took a chance on me before really anyone else did. And I started getting in and explaining how like the closing gift itself was like a good piece. But then I would hang out afterwards in the back of their sales meetings to learn what real estate was all about. And that move was proved to be why we were able to be successful. So... what I realized is that there's 10,000 realtors in Indy. Half of them will sell one or less homes. And if I keep spending all my time trying to figure out who those are, I'm going to be out of business trying to spend money on all the things that don't work. Yeah. And everyone's spending money on bread products, you know, bagels, donuts, cake, just to get into the sales meetings. But typically the realtors who sell houses don't even show up to their own sales meetings. So I realized if I threw a party at the Cutco store and invited a handful of other people that are after the same type of realtor, if we could get them to show up to that, then maybe that's the new technique. So long story short, the magazine came second after we were hosting events for the top realtors as a reflection of the top realtors in the industry. And I spent time meeting with all the realtors and saying, hey, if we did a magazine, would you read it? And they're like, yeah, if you put me on the cover, you know, so that's what we did.
You can always get a realtor by putting them on the cover.
That's right.
Realtors get more awards than, not more than actors or TV channels. They get the most awards. It's always neat how every news channel in Indianapolis is the number one most watched news channel.
Well, of course.
They're crazy.
Most accurate. Best coverage. Live, local.
Our certified weather.
That's correct.
Correct. Well, I mean, so it's a healthy piece of ego. I don't lie about that. Like, they want to see their name and face. It'd be like me putting your face on the cover of any magazine and sending it to your friends and family, because these guys are cohorts, right? So, like, I send it directly to all their competitors and their friends in the industry. So if you see your friend on it, you're going to open it and read it. We do that every single month.
Yeah.
And it's free, which is very rare in real estate. Every time a realtor picks up the phone, they're getting sold something.
Wait a minute. It's free?
It's free. Well, it's not free for you. You're going
to
advertise.
Let's pay advertise it.
I get to be in it every once in a while. I'm always happy when I get to be in it.
Yeah. You've got great ads, too.
And I mean, it's sitting on the corner of my desk right now. No joke. The newest one is sitting on the corner because I use it to do exactly probably what you're talking about in the book. That's how I find my top agents.
Yep.
It's hard to sit and search through my board, so you do the work for me. Mm-hmm.
And the content has to be good, because if the agents don't read it, then the vendors don't pay. And that's how we have a company, is vendor cash. So when I go into real estate offices, I'll literally see stacks of the last 12 issues sitting on their desk. They'll call me when they go missing. Like, hey, so my February 2017 was stolen. And those are the calls you want to get. Because
right.
Like, if the realtors are reading it, then the vendors want to be a part of it, because that's where you want to go, where the eyeballs are. And that's what we talk about.
Yeah, I have all of them for like the last 4 years.
They're collectibles.
Yeah, they just get stuffed in it.
Your Sean Daniels episode. So Sean Daniels.
Been there twice.
We've talked about him because he's our spectator today. Sitting on a horse.
Yeah.
We have a couple very fun covers that where the realtors have big personalities, so they get to do
something. A horse he had just met that day, if I recall.
Pepper. Oh, really?
That's right.
Horse named Pepper.
Not the first horse on Indie Real Producers, by the way. I believe the first one was Tracy Garantakis, but she wasn't sitting on it. Sean was the first one. I was like, I'm going to ride this thing.
It would have been awesome if it was like a buck and a bronco, and he was like,
get it up in the air.
I can ride through a hard housing market just like a horse.
Get blood.
Freedom. That'd be fantastic.
Oh, good grief.
I saw a whole year's worth of movie themed covers. Someone needs to write this down. That would be cool.
What? It's being recorded.
All right. Can you send this to me?
I can. It'll be on YouTube.
Nice.
That's a great idea.
Tag me on MySpace.
Yeah. MySpace.
Yeah.
Do you have a MySpace page?
No.
Okay. I never had a MySpace.
I never did either.
Oh, I had one. Yes.
TikTok's not anywhere. Kevin O'Leary's going to own it soon.
I believe that.
I do too.
Time's running out.
So have you ever had a non-realtor on the cover of the magazine?
Only one time, and it was when the CEO of MIBOR retired, Steve Sullivan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He wasn't technically a realtor. He's the only one that was not a realtor that was on the cover. Never put a vendor on. Very rarely put even like a president of a company. We try to make it mostly the top real estate agents in the city.
Honoring the person that was retiring from MIBOR, though, that's pretty...
Yeah, I mean, that was a no-brainer. Yeah. He was there for like 30 years. Yeah. Very beloved by the community.
What realtor would you say has been on the cover the most?
To be on the cover in any multiple times, you would have had to have been on specialty like issues, because really, once you've been on the cover, there's so many agents we got to get to.
Yeah.
But occasionally, we've done some really fun covers. Like the first time we had multiple people do over 100 million, this would have been 2 or 3 years ago. We had 5 realtors that broke the $100 million barrier. We had those 5 on there. We've done like interesting like tattoo issues, any like cool car issues, stuff like that. So I would say Dick Richwine was on the first cover ever, and he's been on one or two since because of those specialty issues.
We talked about getting him on the show.
Dick wants to come on the show.
Oh, he'll be great on the show.
I've known him for most of my career, 27 years or so. He's one of the sweetest people. He's just a good heart, good person.
He's a good dude.
Good human.
He helps with the magazine a lot. I get a call from him once a week about the standings. He's very number particular.
I bet he is. And he's usually right there.
Looking out, man.
If he's not at the top, he's right there near the top.
Oh, yeah.
Seems like Mr. Mike. Is it Mike?
Mike Deck.
Yeah.
Taking a quantum leap.
Yeah, he's just absolutely killing it. And he's one of the only ones that are near his last year numbers based on the magazine.
Is he? That's not shocking. He did 5 million on 184 transactions. So to put things in perspective, the average sale price was $300,000 where he was selling, and he was an average sale price of over $1 million. It's never been done before.
Yeah.
Wow.
His average this year is still running over $1 million.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible.
I'm Brian, your Indianapolis realtor. If you are looking to buy or sell a house in the Indy area, I'm your guy. If you're coming from out of state, want to make a move to the Indy area, I'm your guy. Check out the show notes for a link. We can get in touch and get you started. Thanks for watching. Now back to the show.
Yeah, there's only, I think, somewhere between 3 and 5 realtors who have done over $1 billion. I think there's 4 that I know of that have done over $1 billion.
Those are big numbers.
Yeah.
Brian,
That's
a goal for you.
I'm gonna need some time.
You'll be like 160.
I was just under 5 million last year, so
you know,
those numbers are crazy.
A bit,
but the people that I've met a lot of them from events that you guys put on. Those people work like crazy hard hours.
They do. Yeah, so not all success is created equal either, and I talk about that in the book too, because a lot of people just see that number and like, I know Mike, but if I didn't know Mike, I couldn't just say, yeah, that guy's successful. Because just because you do 185 million doesn't mean you're not spending 186 million. And at the end of the day,
that's so true.
When you're buying your time, I think I read this quote that said, like, most billionaires spend the rest of their lives buying back their time after making the money versus just having that time all along. And I believe that, because I've seen two realtors at the top doing virtually the same business in terms of numbers. One of them is unhappy, divorced, doesn't see their kids, works on the weekends, takes every call. The other one is the complete opposite of that and probably makes less money and lives like a king. And so really the number one, I guess the biggest word that I have shifted my thinking when it comes to success is perspective. Because success is not a number, I'll tell you that much.
No, success, I believe, is more of a, having your peace of mind. You know, just being able to do what you want to do, when you want to do it. And that's within reason. I mean, I answer every call. I work a ton of hours, but I love what
work
I
on
do.
On vacation?
Yeah.
I wake up on a Sunday morning and go to my desk. I don't necessarily feel like I'm necessarily working. But there is a level of, you know, just because you have a fat bank account and a Lamborghini in your driveway doesn't necessarily mean you made it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, don't get me wrong. There's some realtors that are doing it right. Like, they really are. And there is something to be said for ebbs and flows, like living a life unbalanced. I think Matthew Kelly wrote a book called Unbalanced, and it's talking about, like, for certain periods of time, it's okay to be unbalanced.
Yep.
So that, I mean, when I worked in my 20s, I worked harder than anyone I know in my 20s, because that's when you should do that. Because, like, I have the highest risk tolerance that I could have, no dependents, and energy and all the time. And now,
quality.
Yeah, now, like, had I not done that, I would have to be working way harder than I am right now. I have to see the same, you know, level of success, whatever that means.
I feel like you kind of fall back into it when your kids are gone. Like,
really?
Now it's just my wife and I, and we don't have grandkids.
Yeah.
So my kids are in their 30s. There's a lot of days that I just don't have anything to do but work.
That's right.
The years of racing and spending time with the family, all of a sudden they're not here anymore.
But you enjoy it.
That's, I do. I love
you,
what I
do. You like what you do.
Yeah, it's completely different. If you hate it, I couldn't do what I do.
Yeah.
It'd be, and I know realtors that hate it, that are realtors working hard, building a business, that hate the day-to-day business of being a realtor, but they make money at it. They've been doing it a while, and they're kind of stuck in it.
And I don't want to get too dark, but I think the saddest part is when it truly becomes their identity. It's like, I know a story of two realtors here in Indy. This is a true story. One has been in the industry years, and the other one had just started, and she sat down with this realtor and said, hey, when do you plan on retiring? And the realtor started crying, saying, I can't. I never will be able to. Not just because of, like, the lifestyle, like, not creating a business that you could retire from, but also because this is that realtor's identity. And when they leave, what do they have? Like, that's pretty sad. That's pretty sad to me.
I think it happens in a lot of careers, though.
Sure.
I'm sure, yeah. There's a lot of doctors that work until they say, you can't be a surgeon anymore.
Yeah.
But what am I going to do if I'm not doing... I mean, I've always said, I'm not going to retire from the mortgage business. I'll go from 25 loans a month to 5 and do the ones I want to do. You know, I don't see myself ever.
You know, this will be someone doing a shot, going back to my teaching days. You know, the hardest thing.
Oh, yeah. Could do a shot because he said teaching.
After teaching for 20 years was trying to come up with something else that I wanted to do.
Mm.
And I often, in that process, would be like, well, but this is me, you know, when those kids see me, they think, oh, that's Mr. Quinlan, you know, and I'm always Mr. Quinlan to some
totally.
People still. And, you know, it's a matter of comfort for sure, but also a matter of, that's kind of my identity. I'm Mr. Quinlan, the teacher, Mr. Quinlan, the announcer, whatever. But, you know, sometimes you just got to suck it up and move on. when you were little Remington, first of all, where'd you grow up?
Muncie, Indiana.
Okay.
No way. You're from Muncie?
I went to school in Anderson because my mom's still a school teacher at Liberty Christian. My dad's the principal.
Is that where you went to school?
That's where I went to school. That's where I graduated from, but I grew up in Muncie.
Okay. What did little Remington want to be when he grew up?
I don't know. Well, I was in athletics and...
You look like a athlete.
I played basketball and soccer in high school. I played soccer in college, and then I quit and actually started kickboxing for the rest of my time in college.
So I'll keep paying my bill on time.
That's right. That's right. I'll knock on you. I know where you live now.
I'll get you drunk.
So I was essentially going to school to be a physical therapist, but also to own my own clinic. I wanted to work with my hands and heal people, but also like own a business. So when I was really little, I collected basketball cards, started a collection, kind of traded them, mowed lawns so I could buy more basketball cards. That was like my existence: mow lawns, make money, buy basketball cards.
You still have cards?
Oh yeah. I haven't looked at them in 10 years, but I have them.
At one point, I had a Michael Jordan rookie card.
Oh, yeah.
And I had it graded, came out to, like a 7.5 or something. I think I sold it for like $800.
What's it worth now?
More than that. It's not a massive amount, but still, it's more than that.
Yeah.
But honestly, at the time, I used that money to take my kids to Disney World.
Oh, sure.
So it was fun.
I got a buddy who just sold a bunch of Pokemon cards, and he's going to fund his kids' college. It's insane.
Wow. It is, yeah. So some of the collection industry has gone bonkers.
Yeah.
Speaking of Disney World.
Oh, boy. Okay. Yes.
We threw down this challenge that if we raise $1,000 that we're going to give to Brian's charity,
which is still to be determined,
he will run the Disney Marathon next January.
Oh, cool. Never ran anything in my life.
Okay.
My man Brad here ran the Honolulu Marathon back in December.
Yeah. How'd that go?
5 hours, 29 minutes, and it was absolutely awesome, and I'm going to run this one with you.
Wow, I was wondering if you were going to do it. After running, I was wondering if you were going to keep
it. Yeah, no,
it's I was fun. Wondering, too, and he's like,
it's still running, and
he kind of got the itch, and so...
Awesome.
So, yeah, I ran my
5K. Look at this.
Okay.
So now we're at 260.
Yeah.
So I told Brian I had a special announcement to make this to push it a little further.
Who has contributed?
You're really the only one giving up anything by having to run the marathon. So I feel like that I should give something up too, even though I'm going to run with you.
Okay.
So I will match the $1,000.
Oh, dang.
So it'll be $2,000 to whatever charity that you're going to do. So we're at 260 so far.
Excellent. Well, thank you. And if anybody has contributed online, thank you that we figured out.
Yeah, we can do a Venmo or
just put a Venmo.
Reach out to Brad. Put a Venmo thing on there.
Okay. I can do that.
And then maybe in the future, people just keep sending me money.
And YouTube,
tied to a
YouTube lives in perpetuity.
Yeah.
It's fine. Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. The marathon should be, I believe it's January 11th or 12th or something like that, down at Disney World, which to me looks like a pretty fun event. I mean, except for the fact that you're running 26 miles, you get to run through.
You have a year to train.
I do. Yeah. I actually just went through and still kind of doing physical therapy for my knee. So things need to get stronger before I can be ready for that.
Yeah.
But,
9 months. 9 months of training.
Sure.
That's what I think you should
do
to make sure you do it. But
either way, I'm committed at this point. So thanks for your generous contribution.
Another great
Brad
out there.
And Sean, thanks. I guess.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that, Brad. I guess. When I was explaining the aftermath of that to my wife and what I was committing to, she thought I was crazy. She says, wasn't it just a couple weeks ago you were saying you were going to be having knee surgery and now here you are talking you're going to run a marathon? I'm like, it'll be fine. We're going to make it work. But I said, as I was going through the motions that day and saying, if we can raise this amount of money, in my head, I was like, if Brad had to, he would contribute $1,000 to make me do this marathon. So I knew it was going to happen regardless. And we're on our way.
You're not in the real estate business, but in the real estate business.
I mean, I have real estate. I've bought and sold lots of real estate.
I would say, do a lot of people you talk to think that you are a realtor?
Yes. But that's a great opportunity because then I can connect them with an actual realtor and connect them with all the people I know and have that conversation. And I never let a lead just fall. I never just say, no, I'm not a realtor. Like I've made my realtor lots of money.
Yeah.
Nice. So
What do you think we're going to see in 2025?
Market-wise?
Yeah, market-wise, do you think it's going to be easier than 24? You think it's going to be harder? What's your thoughts?
I think
24 was challenging.
Yeah, I think everyone thought there was going to be a thinning of the herd because of the two-year renewal cycle of the realtor itself, and I don't think we're seeing that. I think everything we thought was going to happen is not happening, and because there's enough people saying this is what's going to happen, that can actually change things. I always think about, like, Spencer Raskoff. When he invented Zillow, he could literally control the price of your home. If someone thinks the price of your home is $100,000 because Zillow says it's $100,000, but the price of your home is only, for sake of numbers, $50,000, because Zillow became such a monster, it actually can influence what the cost of your home is. Now, normally, yep, it was the other way around. Your house is worth $150,000. Zillow says it's worth $100,000. Now, people are, like, not willing to pay what they think it is, and it actually hurts the value of your home. So I think what's happening is there's so many people talking about what's going to happen in the market. We're going to have a rebound, and I do think there will be a rebound. It can't keep on bottoming out. Eventually, it has to go back up. But in Indy, what was interesting is finally you saw the housing prices, especially on the north side, catch up to Charlotte and Nashville and Columbus. Mm. And now I think we're going to be pretty normal to those small, big cities, at least here in Indy. And nationwide, I don't even want to take a crack at that because I don't know. But I do know that the top realtors will find a way regardless of what the market says.
Yeah, the strong will survive. No,
they always do.
I seen an article today that 9 states have now are back to pre-pandemic levels of inventory.
Yeah.
And Indiana is still 17%
yeah,
below 2019. And I go back to what business looked like in 2019, and it was an easy market.
Yeah, fat and happy.
Yeah. Not like 2021, but it was tougher. I mean, those were great years for a lot of people with no homes on the market.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we're going to see really a lot of movement in rates. So I don't think that's going to help make it go crazy. But I also think people are kind of realizing it is what it is, and it's not as bad as what
right,
they thought it was.
At some point, it's normal. What was interesting about last year is my business is knowing the top realtors, right? So I've had a magazine that goes to the top 500 realtors for the last 10 years. I know them on a first name basis. I know how they think and what they're dealing with. Last year was the first time where you had realtors who had historically been top 100, top 10 even, that struggled and didn't have answers. But if you looked at who those realtors were, they weren't here in 2008. They weren't here in 2000. They weren't here in 95 or 90, whenever those other dropouts were. And this is the first time they're going through it. All the ones who had been there prior and experienced 2008 were like nothing new. Every single one of them.
Yeah.
Because experience matters.
Yeah. And knowing how to get through those times.
Just a mindset.
Yep. Yeah. I think I told you we talked about it. It's my fourth best year in 27 years in the mortgage business with rates where they were. And I had 4 people file for divorce, so I got to do 4 refinances.
That's wild, though. That's wild that that was your fourth best year. Like, that's not normal. That's got to be something that you were doing.
I mean, I have some great agents. My agent relationships, those are the things that grew. Because the agents that I have also went through those times, so they're still doing well, and I continue to add those kind of agents.
Yeah.
And that volume just stays there. It's all about doing what you talk about, just good service, doing what you say you're going to do.
Mm-hmm. Calling people back.
Yeah.
Call the damn leads. I can't believe people don't call the leads.
They don't.
Nope. So if you could drop like a sales nugget for someone that's thinking they're doing all the things that they're supposed to do, yet it's just not there for them, what's the sales nugget that you could drop that people most likely are missing?
Put stock in discipline instead of motivation. And what I mean by that is, like, some people look at the top realtors or top lenders or top salespeople and they're like, whoa, Brad must be really motivated. And that might be true on some days and not true on other days. But what Brad is disciplined. You wake up on a Monday and you said, I'm going to make 20 phone calls today or 20 phone calls this hour, and you don't feel like it. It's not even a second thought. You're doing it because you said you were going to do it. I think because we're emotional people, we just think that's going to be our excuse. I'm just not as motivated as Brad. Well, that may be true. That might be some people that are more motivated than Brad that aren't getting the results because they're not like disciplined enough to work when they're not motivated. And so if you get unemotional about the numbers, you can be emotional about everything else. Just make sure you're doing the numbers of the thing that you said you would do. And if you are unemotional about that, it enables you to be more on point when you're actually having the conversations for the relational part of the sale. But what happens is people get into the sales mode, and in the back of their mind, they're thinking, I got to make this sale. I have to make this sale. I didn't make the last one, so I'll probably make this one. And then they botch the relationship because they're just thinking about the transaction in the back of their head, and it becomes emotional, when in reality, it should really be unemotional. If you sell on 50%, you're going to sell on 5 out of 10. Don't worry about the 5 that you don't sell. So that's my, I've been on that for all year, especially with what happened in 2024. Like in our business, I mean, we're selling ads into a magazine that's the first thing people cut out is advertising. I can't afford advertising, you know, and it should be the first thing they go towards when they're struggling is getting in front of more people.
Right.
So yeah, I had a great year just explaining that to people.
Okay. So how do you recognize when you're Colonel Sanders and you just have a shitty presentation?
Are you talking about my newsletter?
Wait. I did, because I used it on that same Monday update video that I sent out to all my realtors. That was such a great story.
A little context?
Yes. Do you know the numbers off the top of your head?
Yeah, 1,001.
1,009, you said.
I'm sorry. You're right. 1,009 was how many times Colonel Sanders got shut down for the idea of KFC.
Okay.
And that story is told by every motivational speaker you've ever heard about resilience. Mm. Like, don't give up, don't give up. But the second I heard that, all I could think of is he must have just been a terrible salesman.
Because he had a great product.
Yeah, everyone loves KFC. So what are you doing, man? You're in the way of your own product. Like, sharpen your axe. Spend some time learning sales so that you don't have to spend years. The dude went down. When he died, he was one of the three most richest men and the most recognizable person on American soil. So it was successful. He didn't change the recipe. The chicken was good. It still is good. And it was himself probably forcing the issue because of emotional sales. Like, why don't you love this chicken? I don't know what the answer is. I wasn't there. But I don't hear that story as resilience. I hear that as like, that's dumb.
So how do you recognize that you might be in that spot? What's the thing to do to go, okay, I just need to change how I do what I do. What would you like?
I'm going to say something that no one's going to do. No one's going to do this because they don't want the answers. You send an email to your 5 closest friends and you ask them for actual feedback on your life. You say, I would like to grow this year. Here's where you even tell them where you're struggling. This is where I'm struggling. Give me an honest feedback on why I'm struggling with this or how I can become better. And no one's going to do this.
Yeah, very few.
That's because they don't want the answers. I love it.
Yeah, I do my goals at the end of each year. And then I submit those goals to a couple of people.
Yeah.
And say, one, hold me accountable to the work, because my goals are based on work, like, this many calls a day, this many calls a week, you know, this many presentations, this many loan applications. So I kind of know what it takes to get to my number. And then I tell people to hold me accountable to that. And then what do I need to change about me to make sure that I hit that goal? I ask that question to people.
Are they good friends? Do they actually tell you?
Yeah, one's my business partner who, you know, Peter and I have worked together for years. You've met Peter, and he'll flat out say, well, you're not going to hit that number. You know,
yeah.
Like, we have those conversations. The other's Matt Braun, who is my loan partner and I work really close with.
He's been on the show.
He's been on the show. Yep. He'll tell me.
Yeah.
And then I take that advice.
Good friend.
And go, you guys are idiots.
Yeah.
No, I internalize it. I'm always worried about that stuff. How do you not, maybe you do. Do you ever get stuck in kind of worrying about how you do what you do, or mentally feel like you're doing something wrong, or you kind of get down on yourself?
Are you, I don't know what you're asking. Are you asking, do I ever get a funk?
Yeah. Do you ever think, okay, gosh,
why did this work?
Why did that work? Or what did I do wrong? Or what does that person think?
You know, I always say, I don't worry about what people think of me, because they don't.
Yeah.
People don't think of other people. People are thinking about what you think of them.
Yeah.
And they're over there thinking about what they think of them.
Well,
I get in a funk sometimes.
Two things to that. I'm too optimistic. I'm too excited about getting the answers to why something failed to be down on myself. I'm so fascinated by the process. I don't waste my time ever. Like, even when I'm watching television, which some people could argue is a waste of time, for one, it's the only time where I can really get away from the business and actually shut my mind down, either that or a book. But two, when I'm not shutting my mind down, I am putting together messages, points, takes, ways I can communicate to my people. There's always a time where I'm analyzing, and I'm too curious to be depressed. So if something's not working, I'm like, okay, let's figure out why this doesn't work. And if someone, and that's why coaching, and you have to have that same bone for like your people too, because a lot of people who listen to this or in real estate desire to have a team, desire to take themselves out of it, or just coach other people because that's your way of giving back. If you're constantly on the lookout for a way to relate to people, failing or whatever that means, like doing something that doesn't work and figuring out how to make it work is so exciting to me that there's no time to be depressed about that. So I also don't define myself by my work. I think that's where people get all sad about things, is like, things don't go well, then I'm a failure.
Yeah.
And I suck. It's like, no, I mean, you only got to be right once. Like, people see real producers and they're like, oh, whoa. But they don't see the 10 other ideas I had, you know, silly putty that doesn't get stale, you know, all this. That's
sure.
That's not one of them, but I don't know why I thought of silly putty. Or like inventions that suck.
I'm surprised you're old enough to know what silly
putty. Oh, silly putty. You put it on newspaper, you can read it, yeah.
You know what a newspaper is. You just seen that in like a museum. Yes, no.
Maybe Remington's older than we
are. Yeah, I think he's like 30.
36.
All right.
There you go. Well, I have kids your age.
Yeah.
You're old.
I am, I know. The other day I was going to send a Snapchat, and I was looking at myself in the picture, and I thought I clicked the old guy filter. And I was like, nope. Nope, my face really is starting to droop.
Just got to hold the phone up here.
Yeah.
Better that way.
Yeah, you need to get a hat that sucks everything up.
That too. Big hats help. All right, well, let's wrap this up. Remington, thank you so much for being here.
Great show, guys. This is a lot of fun. You got a really cool thing going.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate
that.
Feel free to, you know, share out on your social media.
I will.
Tag you on all that.
Absolutely.
Thanks for coming out. Enjoy your workout today.
Cheers, my friend.
And thank you for watching. Subscribe, leave us a comment, and share. We always appreciate it. And, of course, go check it out on the audio podcast world, because Brad's sharing that everywhere.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, 16 podcast channels. I don't
awesome.
Know there's that many places.
Where podcasts are sold. Thanks for watching. See you next time. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers.